This week on It's So Bad, we enter the danger zone as we play X-Men for the Sega Genesis on It's So Bad. Welcome, Steve. We are
Hello, Mike.
We're recording, and we're finally together. It's taken us a while, but I'm also with Chris.
Michael, hello. Well, we're not really together. And we're virtually together.
Virtually together. Hello, Matt. How are you?
Hello, Michael. I'm well. How are you?
Matt, I decided that maybe we should call you New Matt with the NU, like New Metal. I think that's better than Matt 2.0. But it's up to you if you want to make up a new moniker.
I happen to enjoy new metal, so that's okay.
Oh boy.
That's like Mudvayne and shit, right? Mudvayne, Seven Dust, like that's all new metal, right? Kinda.
Sounds like it's official then.
You know, this podcast is gonna live forever, and you just said all of that, so.
Good for you.
I'm okay.
You be you, man.
I will.
Cool.
That's all I got during this pandemic.
Just so being week, you and Mudvayne Records.
And X-Men. All right, sorry, go ahead.
And X-Men. this week we are adding X-Men, the Sega Genesis game from 1993, to the Endless List. Our Endless List currently goes from Super Mario 64 all the way down to Jurassic Park Trespasser. This is our 89th entry on the Endless List. What we do every week is we add a new game. We are ranking games, every game, all the games, in order of greatness, how good they are, how influential they are, how well they've held up, etc. And this week we're adding that X-Men game that you might remember if you grew up in the 90s. Developed by Western Technologies, Inc. and published by Sega. I was surprised that it was published by Sega. But yeah, so Matt, you chose this game, so why did you choose X-Men?
Because everybody else hates it. No, because I actually have a lot of fond memories of this game. I remember, like, I did not have Sega the first time I played this game. I was at a friend's house. I was probably like 9 or 10 years old, and his parents went to their weekly trip to Blockbuster and picked up a game for us to play, and this happened to be it. And I just thought it was so cool because I remember spending, you know, a shit ton of quarters to play X-Men the arcade and like Chuck E. Cheese, and like no one really wants to be in Chuck E. Cheese. You go for, you know, individual things. So it was nice to kind of like, you know, to play this game at home without going there. So, but ultimately I ended up getting a Sega a few months later for my birthday, and this was one of the games that my parents bought me with the system. So I got super into it, discovered like kind of every like little nook and cranny and kind of cheat to get through levels as quickly as possible, and eventually ended up beating it, but I know a lot of people find it to be quite challenging, so.
Yeah, I mean, I remember playing this game back in the day when I went over a friend's house and they had a Sega Genesis. I didn't have a Sega Genesis at the very start of the Sega period. I had one later on when it was became fashionable to have a Sega Genesis, when people were playing sports games, I would say. And it was like, oh, the cool kids have the Sega Genesis. I had the Super Nintendo, and eventually switched over to Sega at some point when I went to Funko Land. But yeah, I remember playing this game and enjoying it back in the day. I don't know, did Steve, did you play this game?
I have vague memories of playing this, like same situation, like friend had Sega Genesis. I didn't have it. I have vague memories of playing that. I did have the Sega Game Gear growing up, though. So I played, there was an X-Men game for that that I played a lot. So that's kind of my X-Men gaming memory from growing up.
It's not
up.
The same game, is it? The X-Men Game Gear game?
I don't think it is, but it's pretty similar. Like, I don't even know. When did this game come out? This was
93.
All right. So then what's one? Game Gear.
Yeah, it's different, but
yeah, that came out a year later, 94, and it looks a little bit more modern too from my memory of it, not like a huge leap,
right.
But I remember it having a little more polish on it, at least for a handheld.
Yeah, this game actually never came out in Japan, which is weird. It's came out in North America and Europe, which I found was funny, especially when Sega was producing it. So, but yeah, Chris, did you play this game back in the day as well?
I did. I played it quite a bit. This was a kind of like what Matt said in a way. This was like a blockbuster rental game that I beat, you know. I remember it was very difficult when I was a kid. I also didn't have a Sega right away. I actually had a Nomad before I had an actual Genesis console. I had a Nomad first.
I don't remember you having a Nomad.
When they first came out, my parents bought me a Nomad instead of a Genesis console, and it's still somewhere buried in my parents' house. I fear though that the screen is cracked, which is too bad because I know those are worth a good amount of money. But I did ultimately get a Genesis console after that. But I think I played this during my period having a Nomad, I think. Ooh. But yep. I did definitely play this a lot and beat it. I played the second one a lot more. The sequel to this, I played a lot more, but I did play this one.
I can't believe how expensive those are going now. Those are like, I was just looking up on pricecharting.com and they go for around $300. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait till I ultimately find that in my parents' house and the screen is cracked.
I would 100%. I would 100% sell that. I think my little brother cracked it immediately.
Yeah. Oh, I think my little brother had cracked it. So
you can replace it. I bet it's not that hard of a
fix. I can replace my little brother? Maybe probably not at this point.
So this game, as I mentioned, came out in March of 1993. Some perspective on what came out in March 93. It was the year that Doom came out. Star Fox came out that year. Mortal Kombat 2, Secret of Mana, Zombies Ate My Neighbors, which is a game we talk about on this podcast. And also Daytona USA came out that year. Which Daytona USA must have been like such a leap when that came out. If it came out in 1993. But yeah, this game you can only find, it's only ever been released on the Genesis, so you can't find it anywhere else. It's probably because the rights are so hard to get. But yeah, so Western Technologies developed this. It's a U.S. studio. They previously made, before this game, they made Art Alive. Does anybody know what Art Alive is? So Art Alive is like the Sega attempt to make a Mario Paint.
Oh, I literally just watched the history of Mario Paint on YouTube before this. And yeah. I think I was like kind of like half paying attention during that part.
What's that guy's name?
Norm, the gaming historian.
Yeah, Norm the game. I watched that, I think like when Friday or something when it came out. But yeah, there's also the Menacer. They made a game for the gun, the Sega Genesis gun. And this Western Technologies made that game. That's the only thing that they made before this. But one of the designers on this, his name is Bruce Straley. He'd go on to direct Uncharted 2, 3, 4, and The Last of Us. One of the designers on X-Men. was the director of The Last of Us. So
see, somebody knew what gaming they were doing. You know?
Yeah, some gaming current events coming in here to the 93 X-Men. Yeah.
So I think there's two, Neil Druckmann and Bruce Straley are the directors of The Last of Us. And yeah, Bruce, it must have been like right at the start of his career. There's like three or four designers on X-Men and he was one of them, which is interesting. But yeah, so this game, you are in the Danger Room and you are a selection of 90s X-Men. When they were really pushing Gambit super hard, you could play Mon Cherie.
Well, Gambit is so 90s and is so awesome. So I mean, he was
the first one I picked.
I was a big superhero comic book reader at the time. I wasn't that big into X-Men. I was more of like a Spider-Man, Venom fan and stuff like that. But Gambit, I think, was like the character that got me to start purchasing X-Men comics here and there because I just thought he was like really cool.
You thought he was cool? I was like looking at him and I'm like,
he's throwing energized, I mean, yeah, in 2020.
He can shot shit with his hands and explodes.
He's got cool throwing cards.
He's got
fingerless gloves.
He's got the trench coat.
Yeah, I don't understand gloves. He's got like the uniform, but he also has a trench coat over the uniform. I'm like, dude, he's kind of 90s. Overkill.
He's 90s.
He's a Cajun. Staff. He just does what he wants.
I do like
he's
got the bow staff too.
I like how his costume has like the headpiece that keeps his hair out of it. So he like wraps around his head and his hair pops out of it. It's really good. Remy LeBeau.
Dude, He's extreme yes, right. 90s with an X. That's what he is.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. So you could be Gambit. You can be Wolverine, of course, because Wolverine was like the most popular X-Men and still probably is the most popular X-Men of all time. And then you can be Cyclops and Nightcrawler as well, which I found to be a very weird selection of characters, especially for the 90s when they had the X-Men cartoon. And like, was Nightcrawler even in that cartoon?
I don't remember him that much. I know. He must have been like a peripheral character. Right.
So they had
Yeah, I don't remember him being that either. He probably did. Like, I feel like a lot of people, like a lot of different characters popped up in that show. They're like going back and watching it.
Right.
You're like, oh my God, I can't believe like Deadpool's in it for like a split second when Morph was like changing into him and whatever. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like stuff like that.
But
I feel like Nightcrawler wasn't established until 2002 when he almost killed the president in that movie where he's like zipping around like through the White House and the Oval Office. X2. Yeah. Like that was when I was like, ooh, Nightcrawler. Not bad.
I was surprised they didn't because I can't tell and I didn't look into this and like you might have the answer. I don't know if this game was to promote the comics or the animated series or a combination of both. But I was kind of surprised that for 1992-93 that Jubilee wasn't in the game. That was kind of the surprising omission.
So I was a big X-Men fan back in the day, especially right around this time. Was like I was huge into it, and I think I was even a fan even before the cartoon came out. So when the cartoon came out, my mind like exploded. I was like, "Holy shit! There's a cartoon!" Because there wasn't really like superhero cartoons before that, or like there were, but they weren't cool. Like there was the Justice League one from the 70s that totally was like terrible and. You know, campy. So when they made like a serious X-Men cartoon, and it was like mind-blowing. But I was a big comic book guy, and I think X-Men was like my first like real love in comic books. I forget what your question was, Chris.
Why wasn't Jubilee more prominent?
Was the game promoting the cartoon, or was the game promoting the comics, or was it promoting both?
Yes. So I think Jubilee was big in the cartoon, wasn't really big in the comics, and then this game was like a kind of a cross between the comics and the cartoon.
Jubilee kind of has like the rogue role in the movies, where she's like the newcomer young X-Men who's like kind of taken in under the wing of the group.
Right, and Jubilee has really only been popular in the cartoon. She was never really had a big role in the comics.
I heard
she always had
she has fireworks for powers, which is kind of like a bizarre, like, you know, I remember like her attacking Juggernaut in the cartoon and him being like, what, like that tickles, like that's, you know, getting shot with Roman candles, that's her power.
Yeah, it's weird.
She became a vampire at one point, I heard. Like sometime in the past decade or so, she was a vampire for a little bit.
We were talking about this, and when you get to like 500 or 600, even more than that, there's like 1,000 different X-Men comics at this point. When you have that many stories, literally everything that could happen has happened already. So
someone has become a vampire at some point.
Right. They've been zombies. They've been vampires. They've been cloned. They've been killed off and came back multiple times. Literally, like, Wolverine, Cyclops have died and come back multiple times. So,
speaking of clones, taking it back to the game, they are, in fact, the X-Men are cloned in one of the levels of this game.
Yeah, so what is this game? We haven't really talked about it, but it's an action platformer, right? So you take on the role of either Gambit, Cyclops, Wolverine, or Nightcrawler. Each of them has their own powers, and you have to work your way through levels. And kind of the gimmick of the game is that the levels are kind of maze-like. You have to figure out what to do, whether or not there's switches, or you have to find keys. But you need to. There's always like some obstacle in front of you that you need to get around before you can progress. I don't know, Matt, if you want to elaborate on that even more.
See, like, that's where I think people get hung up. So, like, I, you know, playing the game as much as I did growing up, Nightcrawler, I think that's, like, everyone's kind of, like, least favorite character. At least people I know that play the game, like, oh, what does he really do? But, for example, in the second level is really challenging. But if you stay on the ground floor and teleport through all the walls, you can pretty much skip the entire level. And then when you get up to, like, that spacecraft that kind of carries you to where you fight, ultimately, Deathbird, you just keep on holding like the teleport button every time a guy pops out of the ship or an asteroid goes by, and you're done with the level in about like 5 minutes or less. So you can kind of avoid some of those keys and switches and stuff like that. But yeah, there are certain points in the game where that's a pain in the ass. Like on Asteroid M, that was like kind of a pain in the butt to find everything you need to kind of like go through and progress through the levels. But yeah, the plot being, do you want to go over the plot, Mike, or do you want me to do it?
Yeah, you can go over it.
So yeah, so Magneto like pretty much hacks the Danger Room, and the X-Men kind of think they're just being challenged like they usually are to you know, get ready for battle. They have that Danger Room where they have different simulations and whatnot. And I think the whole point is that it does get more challenging through the game, because it's supposed to kind of get more challenging, like where they're like, they make comments on the fact like, oh my God, this is getting like harder and harder. Is this really, you know, it's Professor X testing me? And then you kind of find out that it is Magneto who has hacked the Danger Room, and then you ultimately go fight him on Asteroid M to take the kind of take the power back. So
yeah, so you start off in the first levels of Savage Land, then you go to the Shi'ar Empire, that, and then you go to Excalibur's Lighthouse, which is random. I don't know why you're going to Excalibur's Lighthouse. And then
you're in a simulation room, so you know.
And then after,
it could be anything.
After that, it's Mojo's World. Is that right? What's after?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then. So you go to like all these, you're seeing like a representation of all of these various different things. But the levels, even, they're like so random, the places you go. It's not like the mainstay of the X-Men. It's like the secondary things. Like the Savage Land is like, you don't really see the X-Men go there that often. And like Shi'ar Empire is like, you know, kind of off to the side a little bit of what the X-Men are doing. They sometimes go there, but there's no heavy hitters of the X-Men. And you go to like Excalibur's place, and for some reason you fight Apocalypse, I guess because you first fear an X-Factor. I don't know why you fight Apocalypse on Excalibur's Lighthouse. That doesn't make any sense.
It's a simulation.
This is all just one big Star Trek holodeck episode.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. It's just like that episode of The Next Generation where they get trapped on the holodeck and it goes nuts. But I think like one thing that we haven't touched on that I think when I was a kid, I thought it was cool that like you could kind of switch on the fly between four X-Men, and then you also had like the ability to call in four additional X-Men. And
so you can do that, but you know there's a limit on each level of how many times you can switch between characters.
Every level is different.
And it says in the manual how many times you can do it, but I don't understand why they made it different for each level. They made it like the first level you can switch four times, the second level you can switch two times, the third level you can switch three times. It's like why is this so random?
Magneto is keeping you on your toes. That's why.
That's right. Yeah. The simulation. I'm just going to keep on saying that over and over again.
Yeah. So you can call it. I think, Chris, you mentioned briefly that you can call in support. So you can call in Iceman, who creates like a platform for you to walk across, which you can use to skip parts of the level if you are that knowledgeable. Archangel, you call in. He can kill bosses pretty easily. As well, Rogue, if you line her up, she can kill bosses pretty easily, which are all support. And then if you fall off a platform, Jean Grey's there to pick you up, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, she picked me up a lot. I would lose track of the ground a lot.
By the way, that Jean Grey design is like so classic to me with the what is it, like the yellow and blue with the headbands as well. I love that design.
A lot of headbands keeping that 90s hair out of people's faces.
I love that shit. That's my shit right there.
It's like a workout. I think also totally entrenching this in the 90s too is like there's the occasional cutscene. Quote-unquote cutscene in between levels, and this is like during like Rob Liefeld doing a lot of the art for X-Men. Are you familiar with Rob Liefeld?
He does like ridiculously disproportioned shit.
Right It's like, so Steve or Matt, if you're not familiar on that, like have you ever seen like that really infamous picture of Captain America with like the huge bulging out chest that like makes like no sense whatsoever? That's Rob Liefeld, and like he was doing a lot of the art for the X-Men around this time. Like, you know, like it's like the tropes are like people like Cable and Bishop, like they all have like pouches on pouches on every part of their attire.
They all have like huge chests. They all have, their chests are like gigantic.
Right. Yeah. He can't draw feet, so feet are always obscured.
I was just going to say that. He can't draw feet.
But where I was going with this is that, like, you know, the art is clearly, like, someone trying to do, like, a pixel recreation of it. And there's, like, one of Rob Liefeld's other traits is that he draws women with thongs in a very cheeky poses and very exaggerated poses.
Yeah, he was big on Psylocke.
And I saw that, and I was like, oh my god. I was like, this is disgusting. And I was like, of course. It's Rob Liefeld art being converted to this game. And I was like, of course.
So that brings up another good point about the women. For some reason, also, so they had random levels, and then the bosses are also pretty random. So, like, Deathbird, I, like, followed X-Men for a long time. And, like, Deathbird, I know who she is. She's, like, the Shire Empire's...
sister or something, right? Lilandra's
sister, right? So,
yeah.
So that's, like, wicked random. And then they had, who's the other boss on the second level? Or on the first level? Zalandra or something? Something like that? I was like, what the fuck? Who the fuck is this? And then...
Yeah, I feel like Omega Red could have been in this game.
Yeah.
The Blob could have been in this game.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically anybody in the Brotherhood could have been in this game.
Those guys, Brotherhood guys, were always, like, main people. And so, I guess. But, like,
You got Sabretooth as, like, a mid-boss, though.
Yeah, and Juggernaut's a mid-boss, too. Like, what the fuck?
Apocalypse is just, like, the guy in the third level. Like, it's... What?
Yeah.
It's weird. We're very weird creative choices.
Yeah, the villain hierarchy is all messed up here.
Yeah, so I thought, like, the animations in this game were pretty good. That was the one of the strong points. I think how the X-Men walk and how everybody looks is pretty distinct. And each of the characters have their own, like, special moves. So Wolverine has his claws. It's like, this is the first game. Wolverine was in X-Men for the NES, which is a terrible game. He had his own game for the NES, which was also a terrible game. This is, like, the first game where he uses his claws effectively, which was fun. And this is actually this is the first decent X-Men game. Actually, and now that I think about
it. You're not counting Spider-Man and Arcade's Revenge? Or Spider-Man and X-Men and Arcade's Revenge?
That game's worse than this game. That was not a good game.
That was sarcasm.
But X-Men the Arcade game with Magneto saying, "Welcome to Die," I believe came out before this game. So that game was pretty fucking sweet.
'92.
That beat-em-up game. Which had two screens and you could be six players, I think. Is that, I think that's what it was. It was, like, ridiculous. It was just this huge, huge setup. But yeah, this was, like, the first decent home console, and it was at the height of X-Men fever. So people loved the shit out of this game when it came out. But I mean, Matt, what do you like about this game? What's your fondness to this game?
I think it was challenging. Once you beat it, you kind of have, like, that fulfillment. And then even going back, like, the older I got, I don't know where the hell my Sega is now, but, like, playing through emulation, I actually just put it on my Sega Mini recently. It still holds up to me. You know what I mean? Like, it's still, I remember certain parts of, like, oh yeah, you could teleport through the walls and get the Apocalypse immediately and not have to deal with all this nonsense and kind of, like, run through it just to, like, again, feel the entire experience of the nostalgia. And, you know, again, I think to me, it just kind of still holds up as a true X-Men game. And there's not a whole lot of X-Men games out there that are, like, adventure-based. You know, there's some, like, pretty good Wolverine games. There was a pretty good X-Men game for Super Nintendo. I forget what it's called. But there's, like, a shit ton of X-Men fighting games, which, like, how many of those do you need? Like, I was looking that up today, and there was, like, some astronomical amount. So
those are pretty good, though. X-Men Children of the Atom is really good.
Yeah. I mean, but again, like, an adventure-based, like, kind of, like, all right, I'm going to set out to kill villains and go through levels and, you know, that type of stuff.
What's the game for PS1 and GameCube that I really liked? I forget. It was, like, Diablo.
Oh, Legends?
Yeah, X-Men Legends. That game was
great. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Those are good games, yep.
Yeah, so those games were pretty good.
But those are more recent. But, you know, as opposed to going back to, like, '93, you didn't have a whole lot. Besides the arcade game, which no one really had access to at the time other than going to an actual arcade.
Yeah, I mean, that game never came out on consoles. It's really weird that the X-Men arcade game never came out on consoles. But yeah, so there was the X-Men 2 as well, the Clone Wars. I remember that game being pretty good as well. Did you ever play that game? Yeah,
I did. I never actually owned that, but it's another one I recently downloaded on my Mini, and that's a pretty good one too, yeah, for sure.
That, I think, is... I think it takes one of the good parts of this game and makes them way better and fixes up the bad parts of this game. And you know, I don't think there's a ton of bad parts of this game. I think it's a very difficult, I think, tight handling platformer. I think the one thing I don't particularly care for with this game is that, you know, it's kind of one of those games with combat where, to me, I feel like as you attack an enemy character, it kind of feels like you almost kind of like slide through them. And, you know, and it's like, that's always like a sign of like loose combat. And that's, you can accommodate to it. It just doesn't feel good.
I thought the my problems with the game are that I didn't like the level layout because I thought it was obtuse and confusing. And I know they were trying to make it so that you had to think about and explore levels, but I needed to look in the manual to see what each of the power-ups meant. Because, for example, the X recharges your health, and then the blue X recharges your mutant power.
Mutant ability, yeah.
But then they have a K, and I was like, what is this K for? I don't understand what this K does. So I had to go through the manual. Right, it's a key. But it doesn't look like a key. It looks like a power-up. Yeah. So I thought that was like, that was weird. And then also, like, there's no distinction telling me what the K does. So I got the K, but what does it do? I don't know. There's no communication telling you what it does, what door it opens. So I thought that was weird. There's like things like when you're jumping on, when you sometimes will jump on a platform that's obscured in the first level, for example, there's platforms that are obscured and there'll be enemies behind the obscured platform. And I'm like, why do this? What this
piss isn't... you off, man. It's gotta be challenging.
Yeah, but that's
throw spears at you from behind, you know, those trees.
It's fine.
Make you fall down. Gene will pick you up. All's right with the world.
You're supposed to visually communicate. You're supposed to visually communicate when there's an obstacle, right? That's how generally games go.
I can't think of specific games offhand, but I feel like two of the things you touched on, I think, are kind of products of the time. Like, I feel like there was a lot of platforms that probably had hidden villains. And I kind of feel like there was like a lot of games in general that also, like, I think they expected you just to have the manual with you at all times.
Right.
And, you know, dumped a lot of knowledge that you would need for the game, like, in the manual. I mean, like, I kind of remember, like, if I was like, a little kid, my parents were buying a game. On the car ride home, I probably would try to read the manual by the time I got home. And that was, like, kind of like how, like, I educated myself on the mechanics. And I think that was just a product of its time.
I agree, but there were games that were better that communicated you were supposed to do through the design of the game. And that's a big problem, is that they don't communicate to you by playing the game what to do in the game. You have to go outside.
Those are the games that go higher on this list.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, for example, the first level, when you get to that wall, I was like, what the fuck am I supposed to do with this? And I needed to go explore to figure out that there was a switch. And also there was like some things like, I couldn't, when I first played the first level, the tunnel where the switch is, it didn't look like a tunnel to me. It looked like just a wall. So I didn't know that I could jump down to that platform and walk through that wall to get to that switch, which was, I thought, poorly communicated level design. So I don't know. I also think that on some of the, especially on the bosses, and maybe not so much on the random enemies, when you hit them, there's no good feedback that shows you hit them a lot of the time.
Right.
It's like they just go, ugh. And like for a split second, they're like, they like twitch, and it's like, okay, that's communicating to me. It doesn't feel like there's weight behind my punches a lot of the time.
Right, that's kind of what I was getting at too. It's like, I think of like the boss fight with like Mojo. It's like you can kind of kick through part of his sprite and it doesn't do anything. You got to kick him like deep enough into his sprite to do something. And
right,
that's a pet peeve of mine. But
also, so Matt, I got to ask you this question. How did you figure out what to do with Mojo?
Just, you know, I saw the two platforms and was like, all right, definitely have to bounce back and forth because you have to hit him. You know, I think it was behind his chair, right? Like, that's the whole thing.
Yeah, but after you defeat him.
You mean after. I think after.
Oh, okay.
Means, yeah.
You know, that used to piss me off when I was a kid. That did take me a while. You know, I don't think I had really great. I don't even know what the hell internet looked like at the friggin' time. It seems like it's so long ago. But
I don't think it was really around.
I think I actually like hit, like almost by accident. Like went to shut it off, like out of frustration, and like saw like that weird matrix stuff on the screen. I'm like, oh, I guess that's what you do.
Yeah, it's yeah. So there's Steve. I don't know if you got this far, but. It once you beat in the I think the fourth level, once you beat the final boss, they're like it says reset the computer, and it's like, the fuck am I supposed to do? And it just yeah.
That's some Metal Gear Solid Psycho Mantis.
Yeah, and you have and you have to reset the Genesis on the physical Genesis, but if you press it too long, you reset the game completely. You have to like lightly press reset.
Yep.
Wow, that is that's a one way to break the fourth wall, yeah. I guess, and to like completely shatter it. Oh, you held it for too long. Sorry, kids.
Yeah, and just in the general on the bosses, it was hard to figure out what the weak point was on a lot of them.
Yeah,
it was like it wasn't necessary through their design. It wasn't communicated at all, and when you hit them, it was very trial and error to figure out where their where the weak point was. So I just basically, except for Apocalypse, because you couldn't, I just spammed the characters to win.
Archangel and Storm, basically. Characters.
Yeah, yeah. And, Archangel and Storm. But yeah, this is the game. Anything else we want to touch on this game?
I think that about wraps it up.
So, a couple things. So, I mentioned that this game was never released in Japan. Weird, but that happened. 1993 in the comic books was the year that Fatal Attractions happened. So, Fatal Attractions was like a big deal for me. It had a hologram on each of the covers that were prominently featured.
Yes. I remember this now. Yes.
And it was a crossover event within the X-Men universe. And back in, I don't know how it is now because I don't really follow comics, but back in 1993, like the X-Men were separate from pretty much from like the Avengers and Spider-Man, except for when they occasionally crossed over. So like they had pretty much completely separate universes, but the X-Men universe had a crossover within it. So X-Force, X-Factor, X-Men, Uncanny X-Men, Wolverine. I don't forget what the other comics were. I think that's it. Excalibur. That's what it was. They all had like special editions of their comics. And so it all starts with Colossus' sister dies. Magneto comes to the funeral with a giant space station. And he's like, I'm going to kill all of humanity. And then the X-Men have to get together. And they go after Colossus and try to stop Magneto on Avalon, which is not Asteroid M, which is the successor. I think it was Cable's space station or something at one point. I forget how it goes. But Wolverine goes up there with the X-Men, gets adamantium stripped from his bones. Professor X mind wipes Magneto and leaves him in a coma. And like shit was like crazy in 1993 for the X-Men. This is the first time... Wolverine, no one knew that. I think before this, everybody thought that the claws were part of the Weapon X program. They were given to him by the Canadian government because that's who ran the Weapon X program. But they found out that he had bone claws at this time.
This was the introduction. This was the introduction of the bone claw.
Yeah. No, so, that was. I had a friend that loved X-Men back in the day, and like when that comic happened, I remember like. He just gave me that comic because you have to read this. And I was like, oh my God, this is wild.
Yeah, and that was also the first time that we learned that every time he puts his claws through his hands, it hurts. Mm. Like, I thought they were just holes there. But no, he puts his claws through his knuckles every time he pulls out his claws.
Which is like one of the first things in the movie they like establish about Wolverine too. It's like, he can heal and he's a badass, but he goes through a lot of pain every time he does
that. Right.
Well, maybe not a lot, but enough that he's got a remark on it.
Yeah, it got super dark because they were like, there was this whole thing where he was dying basically on the Blackbird when they were leaving from Avalon. I think it was Wolverine number 75. I'm crazy that I know this. And it was Uncanny X-Men number 304. And then it was X-Men number 30. I know this off the top of my head. And why I know this is because it was such a formative part of my childhood. And that
nerd.
But Wolverine 75, he's like dying on the Blackbird, and he comes down, and like the last scene is that he punches his bone claws through his hands, and you're like, whoa, holy shit, that happens.
So wait, the bone claws, they're not stronger than the adamantium.
No, they break.
Right? No.
They break, right? Yeah. Is there a version of the bone claws that are stronger than the adamantium, though? Does he go through like some... I remember somebody telling me that a long time ago. I wasn't sure if that was like a splinter plot line or something.
No, he had bone claws, too, for like 5 or 6 years after that. And he got it back, I think, from Apocalypse. Gave him his adamantium back for some reason. I never got into that storyline, but yeah. We should probably get into where this goes on our endless list, which goes from number 1, Super Mario 64, all the way down to number 88, Jurassic Park Trespasser. Where does this go?
So, I have it, to me, probably somewhere in the 60s. I don't know what people's thoughts are. Like, I was kind of, like, poking around, like, you know, between 40s and 50s. I'm like, there's a lot of good games in the 40s I like. There's some good stuff in the 50s, like... To me, it's not better than Spider-Man 2. Madden's always a really good time, so I looked a little bit lower than that. I'm like, that's a lot of things in the 60s I really don't care for, so I'm comfortable with it probably in that regard, but I'm curious to hear what you guys think.
Yeah, I didn't play too much of this, so I'm going to defer to you guys on this. But, like, yeah, looking at Spider-Man 2 at 50, like, that's a game I played very briefly back in the day, and just like it's another superhero comparison there. It somewhere in the 60s feels about right.
Chris, where do you think this goes?
I was more starting where Monster in My Pocket is and working my way up. It's kind of what I was doing.
Where's Monster in My Pocket? Oh, 81.
81. Which is, you know, I think all these games are all in this 80 to whatever 50 some odd range. Those are all good games. You know,
I would rather play this game than Splinter Cell, for example.
I was just gonna say Splinter Cell strikes me as particularly bad and above Monster in My Pocket at 78.
I think this game's probably more interesting. I don't know. I think above Splinter Cell's pretty good. I'm looking at the 60s, right? And like, I think some of those games are like super interesting. Like Eternal Darkness, it was frustrating as hell to play, but it was super interesting at the same time. Godzilla Save the Earth, super fun multiplayer game, and also interesting to like destroy buildings and how the environment's interactable. I thought that was pretty fun, and I thought it was the diversity of the different characters was also pretty fun, and there's a lot of different characters in that game. I think pro wrestling, for example, sets the genre for wrestling for the next like 15 years, basically. I think it's super influential. I think Paperboy is a pretty fun action game that I can pick up and play whenever, and it's I think it, just that it's different every time you play it. It's different obstacles.
So you've dropped down to 70 here.
Yeah,
we're moving 60, out of the 60s. My goodness.
Listen, I think you got the a case of the nostalgia goggles and the member berries on this one. I mean, this is a to be fair, it's a competent platformer, but you know that's kind
of it's sort of competent. I think that I don't like the level design. I think the level design is bad. I think that the mutant powers, the characters, how you platform is good. I think everything around it is pretty good. I think that there's a lot of things that are obtuse and weird about the level design. I don't understand why after every level... first, a couple things. So when you die, you go back to the start of the level every time, and that fucking sucks. Especially with these the long-ass levels. And then when you die, when you complete a level, why do you go back to the danger room? And why do you think they force you to get those orbs every fucking time to recharge your health? That pisses... It's just
rather just recharge your health.
Right. It's just wasting my time. Why? They don't... It's like they don't respect my time. I hate when games...
It's a simulation. You're still in the danger. You got to earn those points. No, I know. It is frustrating.
It's the simulation is the answer
the
here.
Simulation.
It's
the
simulation.
And then
the thing I found frustrating about the level design. I mentioned Jean Grey kept picking me up because the way that the maps are designed, there'd be like levels of platforms because it's a platformer, and I'd be jumping and I wouldn't be able to see like where I assumed there'd be a platform I could land, and I'd fall like straight into a hole every time, and just the ground would kind of fade into the background a little bit. So I found it really hard and confusing to figure out where I was going to go while I was getting attacked from different sides.
The second switch on the first level, it makes the spikes go down on the spikes, but you can't see the spikes. So, and there's
right,
no platform
exactly.
for you to jump to. So you just have to fall and trust that you won't land on spikes. But 50% of the time you land on spikes because there's spikes below you. So like that shit is super fucking frustrating to me. What else? I mean, there's a lot. I think like even in the danger room when you're in between levels or at the start of a level, when you're selecting your character, it's you can reselect a character if you punch the control panel, but that's not communicated anywhere. You just have to figure that out. And also, do you know that you there's secret cheats? So right next to the character select, there's like 7 boxes. And if you punch the boxes in a certain order, you warp to a level.
There's like there's a Gambit cheat too. You can skip the first 3 levels if you start with Gambit and hold A or some shit like that in the controller. I don't know. Yeah, I hear you saying. The more we talk through it, the more I'm like, it's a basic platformer with cool characters. I don't know. I enjoyed it, but it didn't love it.
it's more interesting than Monster in My Pocket. Monster in My Pocket was very competent in its platforming, but it had zero ambition. Right?
Right.
So it's right. like, it was good for what it was, but it like, it's just so blah. And this game is better than that. And like, I think that it holds up better than a game like Splinter Cell, because Splinter Cell was like,
shit.
Yeah, it just doesn't hold up well. It's like an early
Splinter Cell was painful to play. Like going back, like this was a game that I loved when I played it initially, and I was like had to force myself to boot it up every time.
Yeah, I mean just the fact that X-Men was way more colorful, like. Because that game was just, like, dark and green and black and gray. Ugh.
Yeah. The fact that this is an X-Men game, like, helps
right.
a lot. Like, we all seem to like the X-Men, and it's cool that you get to play as the X-Men in this. And it does a pretty good job of giving you the different, like, abilities and characters.
Yeah.
So I think that does a lot of work there.
Matt, give me your final argument on this.
I got nothing. No, I think you guys, Mike, actually... You did a pretty good job
bottom of the list.
Down the things that are frustrating at the end there, but the answer, of course, will always be it's a simulation. So, no, I'm just kidding. So, no, I don't know. I see what you're saying. But, yeah, it's definitely better than Splinter Cell. So, I guess, you know. I'm looking at the list right now. Yeah, you have Azura's Wrath a little high for me in Minesweeper, but those are separate arguments. You know how much I love Azura's Wrath. But, yeah, I don't know. You guys tell me. What do you think?
So it definitely goes above Splinter Cell at 78.
Yeah.
I think that Contra Hardcore is a much tighter action platformer than... It's extremely hard, but it's much more tighter, and it's got just as interesting level design. I think it's got cooler bosses. I would be hard pressed to put
it
above Splinter Cell.
I think that's where it is.
That's okay.
So right between Splinter Cell at 78 and Contra Hardcore at 77.
Let's put it there.
I love me some Contra, so that's okay. All right.
78. We have a new number 78. It is X-Men for the Sega Genesis. It is, you know, a top 80 game of all time. Congratulations.
When you put it like that, it's, you know, there's a lot of games out there.
Congratulations, Bub. Hey, Bub.
Yeah, Bub.
Mon cher, Bub, what else we got for X-Men shorthand here?
What does Cyclops say?
Gene!
I don't know, just nerdy.
Yeah.
Just nerdy, yeah. Nerdy lining.
That's what Cyclops says.
Hey man, Cyclops is cool.
I like Cyclops, I'm just giving him shit.
Alright, cool. Well, we have a new number 78 is X-Men for the Sega Genesis from 1993. And thank you guys so much for joining. You can Check out the complete endless list linked in our podcast description. You can follow us on the Twitter at It's So Bad Pod. And what else do we have for you? You can email us itssobadpod@gmail.com. We'll be back next week with another episode in our never-ending odyssey to add every game to our endless list. But yes, this one has been good. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Mike.
And thanks, Matt.
Thank you, Mike.